This is Pam Wiley Powell for KPCW Radio Park City. I'm here today with environmental writer Todd Wilkinson, who has a new book that I think is the scoop of the year. It's called Last Stand, Ted Turner's Quest to Save a Troubled Planet. It's about Ted Turner as an environmentalist and philanthropist. But you gotta ask, is this the same Ted Turner who captained the Courageous to an America's Cup sailing victory, but also has a mouth that earned him the moniker Captain Outrageous, and the guy who founded CNN, the first 24-hour cable news channel, married Jane Fonda, pledged $1 billion to the United Nations, lost around $8 billion when AOL Time Warner's stock tanked, was fired, as in stripped of control of Time Warner's cable television division, and in spite of losing a bunch of money in stocks, plus losing his day job at CNN, still fulfilled his pledge of giving $1 billion to the United Nations. Todd, is this the same fellow?
It is the same Ted Turner. It's a Ted Turner who has lived largely out of the limelight with his philanthropy efforts and has existed in parallel to his better-known life.
The better-known life being just what I enumerated, right? So he's received a lot of press coverage, but it hasn't been about the philanthropy and the environmentalism. What exactly do you show about Ted Turner that people don't know?
Well, Ted Turner, many decades ago, received a call to action from Jacques Cousteau, and it continued from the late 1970s onward.
And this is the same Jacques Cousteau who did the
famous environmental Aquaman, whom baby boomers grew up with, revering the man who Ted Turner calls the father of the modern environmental movement, with Rachel Carson being the mother. And Ted carried forward as he started to make his fortune. He got involved in a number of philanthropic and environmental endeavors that really haven't been covered. And, you know, one of the reasons for this is Ted Turner doesn't issue press releases when he does these things, self-congratulating himself.
So in other words, he'll promote his business, but not himself.
Absolutely.
Okay, so he was the guy who said, what was it? It was something about advertise and...
Early to bed, early to rise, work like hell, and advertise.
Okay. But that wasn't about self-promotion. That was about promoting a business.
Absolutely.
Okay. So when it was about something he was doing because he felt the need to do it.
It was about enlarging his brand, enlarging the profile, and when he was building his cable network business, he had to do that because he needed to draw public, elevate the profile and bring a lot of public attention to it.
But when he did the other stuff, it was on the QT, basically.
Basically on the QT. I think people would hear about it, little snippets and pieces here or there when he was interviewed in the media. But there was no book that explored all the significant other sides and these sides that I think are going to be a greater part of his lasting legacy.
So when did he first cross your radar from an environmental standpoint?
Well, I certainly, as all of us had heard about Ted Turner through the 70s and the 80s, I was assigned by a New York magazine to go out and interview him shortly after he had arrived in Montana, and he bought a large ranch called the Flying D, probably the trophy ranch in southwestern Montana, 113,000 acres, and he started pulling the cattle off and replacing them with bison, and he made some disparaging comments about cattle that did not win him a lot of friends in Western cattle country.
In Western cattle country. And that's when you first went, oh, what's he doing there, huh?
Absolutely. And so I was given this assignment to go interview the larger-than-life figure, and I showed up one morning, and we started a conversation that has continued for several decades now.
All right. Now, what you have written in this book reveals a lot of very personal happenings in Ted Turner's life, the suicide of his father when he was, 25?
Yeah.
And his marriage to Jane Fonda, and et cetera, et cetera. How did he begin to trust you as far as writing a book?
Well, this was a series of conversations that originally played out over several years. But when the book's project started more than 7 years ago, Ted said, you can ask anything you want. There were no conditions set on anything. He didn't meddle with anything in terms of me putting the manuscript together. And I think it came about because of the conversations we had, and people had accused him of being unable to reflect upon himself after his last memoir came out called Call Me Ted in the late, around 2008. And so I wanted to get at, because I had found a man who actually was pretty reflective, but he didn't feel comfortable writing about these events in his life. I think they needed to be ferreted out by someone else, and I think that's what happened with Last Stand.
And you were the guy. That's pretty nice. So Turner, in his last book, he gave more or less a public presentation of himself without going into anything, because really, when you're writing about yourself, you're not going to flippantly say, oh yes, and when my dad committed suicide, blah, blah, blah. That's too hurtful to oneself, and that really takes somebody else to ask some questions, and then the person can deliver what really happened.
Well, a couple of things. That's a great question. The first thing is, Call Me Ted was largely an exploration of Ted's business career, charting the rise roughly from when he won America's Cup moving forward. It included some historical references and talking a bit about his childhood and a bit about his marriage to Jane Fonda. But one of the things that people need to know about Ted Turner is that he has a visceral reaction. He does not want to be pitied. And I think that he found that the subject matter a little too intense to try and probe it through his own hand in writing about it. And I think that as we started to delve deeper into that, he realized that it was okay to talk about some of this stuff. And I must say that, you know, there were colleagues and friends and even Jane Fonda who allowed me to ask some tough questions, and that stuff all came to the surface.
So what happens when you suddenly see the depth in this person is that you move away from this rather flippant question of, is he just a rich hobbyist, or is he really serious about planet Earth from an environmental standpoint?
Absolutely. There's Ted Turner, the public persona that's been projected, ironically, through modern media that he helped pioneer. And then there's Ted Turner, who is fairly closely guarded, doesn't reveal personal issues on his sleeve, but they're things ultimately that shape the public persona. And so there's a paradox there in some ways.
So people don't see that, well, he grew up in Savannah, Georgia, out with the rocks and the elements and the salamanders and what have you, and just having a great time in the outdoors and feeling a kinship with that and a sense of home with that. And then when something spectacular comes along after he builds up the business and his dad commits suicide, you need to get back to that.
Well, again, another great observation. It was fascinating to me that as Ted started to build the media empire, there was a quick-to-press book that came out by writer Christian Williams in the early 1980s. And in that, he was asked, the author asked Ted to fantasize on what he wanted to do. And what Ted had said is he wanted to live like a hermit out in the middle of the bush, and be connected to world leaders by remote control radio. He wanted to do good by the world. And what that really reflected was the fact that as he was a boy growing up, nature offered this solace to him. It was perhaps the ideal refuge for him, that there might be trauma in his family life as a young kid, but he always could ground himself again in nature, and he has always wanted to return to that.
Because nature is where this is what's going on, no matter what else is happening in one's private life. This is the touchstone that we all have.
Absolutely.
Okay. Can you give us some examples of where he went with the environmental aspect?
So again, this is all contingent upon Ted being able to marshal resources. So on the media side with CNN and the Superstation, one of the things that happened is through his friendship with Jacques Cousteau, he started producing a number of wildlife-related documentaries. And it grew because he wanted original programming. But even more than that, he started tackling environmental issues, realizing that he had the power to elevate public consciousness about some of these issues, whether it was clear-cutting, whether it was the need to restore imperiled species, whether it was in, you know, the plight of the oceans. And what was I find really fascinating is that during this time, he faced threats by a number of potential advertisers to boycott the stations if they ran this stuff. And Ted said, you know what, I don't care. I'm going to run it. And in some cases, he said, you know what, I'm going to run it again. Run it twice as much as you're running it.
So who was he getting threats from, and what was it about? That suddenly it was the idea of you shouldn't buy a particular product because it's going to be harmful to the environment, or what?
You know, whether talking about clear cutting of the rainforests or talking about overgrazing, or, you know, these are things that quickly boil down and take on almost a partisan context. And the networks weren't covering a lot of these issues. And Ted Turner realized that he would do it. And in fact, he had a woman named Barbara Pyle, a one-person, I would say, juggernaut, who headed the first environmental reporting bureau of any television station in the world.
And everybody else was saying, no, we're not going to bite the hand that feeds us.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, good for him. And it was basically, it was to introduce the world to nature.
It was that, and another thing was happening. So Ted wanted to start covering global issues. The Superstation, after all, was this global station, and then CNN strapped to satellites orbiting. And he as he started to establish bureaus around the world, he became more aware of environmental problems and how they're all interrelated. And so what he wanted to do was get world leaders more involved in tackling some of these. And he founded his first foundation, the Better World Society. And at that point, he met all of these figures, prime ministers and royalty and the heads of countries. And they became his friends, and they remained his friends to this day. And that's a big part of it as well.
Now, he gets dialogue going with people. And he did the same thing with the Goodwill Games, didn't he?
Absolutely. He launched the Goodwill Games because he thought that the United States and Russia, then the Soviet Union, instead of waging a war of words, they thought it would be far healthier to wage competition on playing fields. And as a result of that, President Gorbachev told me personally that that was a great icebreaker, that it got athletes from both nations to talk. It got a lot of people going, and it was far healthier than, you know, this fusillade of rhetoric.
And when was this?
This was early part of the 1980s, and it continued on for more than a decade.
So it was kind of ping pong diplomacy, only it was with the U.S. and Russia, and led to the end of the Cold War, didn't it?
It led to the end of the Cold War, and it also led profoundly to a very deep friendship between Ted Turner and Mikhail Gorbachev.
Nice. And you got to interview Mikhail Gorbachev.
I did interview Gorbachev.
As a matter of fact, you interviewed 4 Nobel Peace Prize winners.
Yes, I did.
Gorbachev and Kofi Annan, and who are the others?
Jimmy Carter and Al Gore.
All right. Those are good interviews. That's pretty nice. All right, so let's move from here